for a WeChat workout. WeChat. Go to the Cliff Central account, tap connect, then message to show. Candid Business on cliffcentral.com.
Hi, I'm Mike Brown, Nedbank Group CEO. You're listening to Candid Business, and Africa is open for business.
Africa is open for business.
Africa is open for business. I'm Ellis Miandu coming to you live at Cliff Central in our studios in Rivonia. Joined as always by Annie Hicks. Welcome to this edition of Candid Business. It's a pleasure if you're joining us live or if you're catching this broadcast via iTunes, where we have a growing archive of podcasts for this show.
Yeah, good day to all the Candid Biz listeners. It's good to be back here again, Ellis. It's Monday, and we're going to have an extraordinary show today. We're going to be chatting about some very interesting entrepreneurs, icons. We're going to be chatting about what's been happening in the economy, and we look at Business Report today. We see that Business Report is the official World Economic Forum media partner, Ellis. This is some exciting news for Business Report. We know it's the Africa stanza of the World Economic Forum, and wow, it's awesome to see Business Report taking the lead on this one.
Absolutely. Well, last week you'll recall, Annie, that we featured Oliver Kahn, who's the director of public engagement, here on the show, to tell us about what you know can be expected from WEF Africa, which is taking place in Cape Town between the 3rd and the 5th of June. It's a big platform. All the CEOs you can think of, anyone with a vested interest on the African continent will be there. No less than 10 or 15 heads of states will be there. We did kind of mention who do you expect from the corporate front, but we know, for example, that the co-chairs for this meeting include Anthony Jenkins, who's the CEO of Barclays,
that's correct.
And you got
the global CEO.
The global CEO.
Yeah.
And you got Paul Polman, who's the CEO of Unilever.
Yes.
Okay.
Those are heavy hitters.
These are people who really have a vested interest in and are already invested on the African continent, but are here to share with us, or will be coming here to share with us, insights about what's next. The theme for this year, of course, is Then and Now, Reimagining Africa's Future. Yeah. So not only Business Report is a partner in this WEF, but we've also brought on board Cliff Central.
Yes.
And we are quite pleased that we'll be bringing you, our listeners, live crossings over the days of the summit.
That's right. Candid Biz will be live from WEF Africa.
And we'll also be growing the archive of podcasts with
absolutely
some interviews with leading business leaders, icons, entrepreneurs out of WEF.
Absolutely.
But I also think, just broadly speaking, this is a great opportunity for South Africa to maybe roll out the red carpet and also convince folks that again, South Africa is also open for business.
Yeah, absolutely.
It is not just a springboard, but it's also a destination.
Absolutely. I think the feather in our cap is the fact that WEF is, South Africa will be hosting WEF Africa, where we're going to see, I think you mentioned, no minimum of 15 heads of state. And we're going to have so many business people in South Africa. And I'm sure that South Africa is going to showcase itself and show that this is a destination to invest in.
Absolutely. So we thought that this edition of Candid Business should be special.
Absolutely.
To that effect, I think we'll have someone here who fits the mold of, an iconic entrepreneur.
Indeed.
I mean, this is someone who's making, inroads around the world.
Yeah.
And is also not just putting herself on the map, but putting Africa on the map. So we hopefully would, have a very inspiring show for you.
Absolutely.
Obviously, if you want to join the conversation, we always say we have an open line here in the studio. You can call us on 0861-555-189. 0861-555-189. We also are on Twitter.
Yes, we are. At candid_buzz.
You could also find us on WeChat via the Cliff Central Cliff Central channel.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll encourage our listeners, you know, even if there's first-time listeners, you know, we welcome you. You know, engage with us, engage with our guest, because the topic is certainly going to be very adventurous. It's certainly going to be very encouraging and inspiring.
So let's talk about the state of entrepreneurship, Ani, in South Africa as we stand. I mean, we've touched on this topic before. From a scale of 1 to 10, where would you think we are?
I'd put us in smack bang in the center, number 5, Ellis, because there are entrepreneurs out there that's making it, but there's also entrepreneurs that's battling out there. And we know the Achilles heel is this thing called funding to start up the business and so forth. But if you can recall about 2 weeks ago, we had an entrepreneur on our show, and they started a cell phone, an online cell phone company, Me For You Mobile.
Me and you mobile. Piggybacking on Cell C.
That's correct. And that shows that there is room for entrepreneurs to flourish.
Yeah. I think 5 is quite optimistic, eh? Because,
I
would love to see the sort of, you know, cacophony of activity that you see when you go to places like India,
yeah,
for example, where, you know, people can truly indeed thrive and set up shop.
Absolutely. You
know, obviously, I'm not saying you have a sort of unregulated situation, but create a situation where there are no barriers, no hurdles for people to start businesses.
Yeah. Don't you think?
And not just, you know, in a survival sort of way,
yeah,
but in a way that then, you know, those individuals can drive meaningful, positive change on the ground.
Yeah, absolutely. I also think that maybe there's too many barriers to entry in South Africa for entrepreneurs. You find that everything is at an exorbitant cost. When you have to go and register your company, there's a cost associated with that. When you've got to engage, you know, telecoms and so forth. We've been pegged as one of the most expensive countries in the world or in Africa in terms of telecom services and the like, Ellis. So for an entrepreneur to start a greenfields project, you find that he's already going to be working backwards, because quite a large amount of his capital has to go into his infrastructure, has to go into set up and so forth. So I think if there aren't those hectic barriers to entry,
we could
see more entrepreneurs coming to the fold. But we need to see more entrepreneurs being successful.
Yeah, but also I think we need to also change the conversation in the country about what being an entrepreneur is all about.
Yeah.
You know, it's about harnessing an opportunity that's there, you know, to solve a particular problem.
Yeah, don't you?
And thereby, you know, as a result, create an opportunity for yourself.
Absolutely, but don't you also think the waters has been muddied by the tenderpreneurs?
I think it has, but you know, back to your score of 5.
Yeah,
you know, I would say perhaps 3.
Okay.
Towards the low end.
Yeah.
If you look at the fact that it's only now that we've come up with the new ministry.
Yeah.
For small business development. That to me would say it's because there's a recognition that the system has been quite deficient.
Indeed.
So we're not there yet.
Yeah, we're not there yet. I'll tell you why I've come in on 5. If you look at the taxi industry, the taxi industry started many, many years ago when you and I were kids in the township. I'm sure you can still remember those old long Valiants.
Yes, sir.
That was the taxis of the day.
And the Kumbis.
Yeah, and then it migrated to this thing called an E20.
Yep.
Can you remember that?
Yes, sir. In fact, funny enough, I was driving the other day and I saw this high ace. It's kind of like rickety.
Okay.
It's been beaten down by the ages. But it has in the back a sticker that says Quantum's father. You know, I love
that. That must have been the Zola bud.
but I love those stickers, you know, that are at the back of each of these taxis.
Yeah,
because there's a story in each one of them.
No, there is.
Quantum's father.
Yeah.
Yeah. We now have Quantum's, right?
That's right. But you see, Alice, the taxi industry started from nothing. And it started from people in the townships, realizing that there is a transportation need, because I don't know what the bus service was like in KZN where you hail from, my brother, but here up here in Joburg, in the townships, we had this thing called Patco, those green buses.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, some people have said those, you know, you could akin to death traps.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which obviously is something Patco disagrees with.
Yeah. And the entrepreneurial spirit displayed by the taxi industry from yesteryear built the taxi industry up to a multi-billion rand industry.
Absolutely. I mean, the entire value chain of that industry is massive.
Absolutely.
And in effect, you could argue that, you know, even as a state, the state is just scratching the surface of what the potential, the full potential of that industry, you know, is.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, it's a very interesting point you bring up, Annie. But, you know, we have to talk about the fact that, you know, there's more that needs to be done.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think, you know, this being Africa, perhaps, you know, it's a bit too presumptuous to want to talk about, you know, formalizing and rigidizing how people start businesses.
No, absolutely.
You know, if you want to rear chickens, just go get some chicks and rear chickens.
Do it.
Grow chickens.
Do it, whatever you want to do. I think many times people get locked down into this, oh, I can only go into a certain industry, you know, and try and make it. But there's a positive, though, Ellis. In the media, we've seen that Minister Patel has put a request forward to the Competitions Commission.
I love that.
To investigate the retail
that was like music
business.
To my ears.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, because there aren't black players in the retail industry in South Africa.
But also, I mean, there's a whole lot of, you know, shenanigans, you know, that are going on, you know, not just in retail, but also we saw in construction.
Yeah. In mining.
Tip of the iceberg. You name it. I mean, oligopolies, you know, these are what these industries have become.
Absolutely.
So it will be interesting to see what he unearths, what he's able to find. But clearly, you know, you can go to every mall.
Yeah.
You're not going to find a single shop or supermarket that is an anchor tenant and, you know, is owned or run by black people.
Yeah. And it's about time that change happens, you know. Government speaks about transformation in business and so forth. Not too long ago, we know that the president cited a certain percentage of black ownership on the JSE. And everybody wanted to throw their toys out and they 3%. Lost their heads, you know. And people were talking about, oh, we're going to get downgraded by 3%. These comments and so forth. But hey, you know, this is Africa. Africa is open for business. And Africans need to start making inroads into what was predominantly a white-owned domains.
Absolutely. So what caught your eye, Annie, from a Pan-Africa standpoint? You remember, I mean, we say Africa is open for business.
Yeah.
So anything caught your eye in terms of developments all across the field, Africa? There's a story about Namibia and a company called Cotton On.
Absolutely. Namibia is definitely one of the shining stars within the SADC region, you know, where we know that they don't have much national debt, you know. Mm-hmm. The GDP is growing at an enormous rate, you know, and the country is very positive.
North of 5%.
That's correct. And we see that Cotton On, which is an Australian company, has now eyed Namibia. They're opening their first Namibian store. And that is positive. You know, we always say that Africa is open for business, but people are actually taking the opportunity and going to do business in Africa. So yes, Namibia is a shining star within the SADC region.
So, I mean, what do you think makes that a positive development, Ani? I mean,
look, I think stability. Namibia is...
Should we not at least see more homegrown entities, you know, or open up shop?
I think, Ellis, once again, I firmly believe in that, and we had this discussion with the esteemed Ladislas Ogbesi.
The executive chairman
of the Pan-African Business Chamber. And he made a fundamental comment where he said that, you know, Africans need to trust Africans. We need to trust each other. And if we can overcome that hurdle, I'd see more black-owned businesses trading up in Africa.
Fantastic. Look, I mean, obviously, there's various areas, you know, that one can speak to. Retail is one of them. I think that Cotton On story speaks to that.
Yeah, it's a clothing retail.
But, you know, agriculture is one space.
Absolutely.
That clearly
transportation
is a big focus on.
Transportation is huge.
And of course, I mean, there was a development, I think yesterday, which might impact our transportation sector going forward.
Yeah, absolutely.
You want to share that with our listeners?
Yes, I definitely do. I'm sure everybody knows about drones. You've seen these things flying about, and some people might think it's UFOs.
And these are real, eh?
These are for real. This morning on one of the television platforms, they actually showed that there's a lot of advertising agencies that utilize these drones to do some aerial shots. And apparently it's much more cost effective than hiring a helicopter or hiring a fixed wing aeroplane. You just hook a camera up and you send the drone off into whichever direction you want to. So guys have been utilizing it to do some very fancy footwork in terms of capturing footage for adverts. We also see that there's a lot of security companies that's been utilizing drones for surveillance purposes and monitoring certain areas. But now we see that the Director of Civil Aviation, Ms. Poppy Khoza, has announced that there's going to be regulations that you cannot just fire up your drone and fly it wherever you'd like to and do as you please with it. There's aviation regulations coming into play, and where you may and may not fly your drone, you also need to be certified.
So more red tape.
Yeah,
in fact, I think it's positive red tape, because not only are these regulations going to codify, you know, how this industry, emerging industry, evolves, but also what is it that, you know, we can tap from it
Absolutely.
To develop the economy? I mean, we touched in our interview last week about
Oliver,
about how drones could impact things like logistics, for example.
I mean, Oliver mentioned that through research, they established that in Africa, to build road infrastructure will cost billions of US dollars.
Uh-huh.
But to put a couple of drones in the sky, and which could land anywhere, you know, it takes the logistics problems out of the way. So you could literally order something from South Africa, and you can have it delivered in Nigeria, wherever remote it might be. It can be delivered by a drone.
Fantastic. In fact, there was also a story that came yesterday whereby there's a school now set up in Benoni where people can go learn how to fly these drones.
Yes, absolutely.
And actually amass quite a number of flight time, you know, on these things. But not only are they useful from a defensive standpoint, security standpoint, but also just, you know, from a logistics,
commercial
standpoint.
Absolutely.
I mean, you remember the situation we had with the delivery of books at one province. So
absolutely.
How about enlisting a couple of drones that could land on any sports field and
absolutely and at the school.
At the school and deliver books.
That's right. That's amazing stuff. You know, technology has really overtaken us and made the impossible possible.
But it's a positive development.
No, it is.
Again,
absolutely.
I think it's technologies like these that have more meaning for Africa, especially looking at the trajectory that Africa is going.
No, absolutely. I also think it's very important that there are regulations in place. Like Ladislas also mentioned to us that in Africa, you know, African waters and African skies, it's like a free for all, you know. Anybody can just fly over African skies. Mm-hmm. Anybody can come and fish in African waters. Mm-hmm. And there's no regulation, there's nothing, no governance in place to stop this happening, this abuse happening. So it's good to see that South Africa is taking a major stance on this. And that you can't
fly in
our airspace, you know. There has to be a regulation that governs it.
Sure. I think, you know, as a country, South Africa is probably the first country to actually come up with these regulations, which would now, I think, would, you know, form a template for the rest of, you know, the continent.
Absolutely.
As this technology, you know, starts being adopted across the continent.
No, absolutely.
The situation in Burundi, I mean, what do you think that has from a sort of macro level? I mean, is it much of anything? The fact that we had a coup and obviously it's been quashed. And, you know, for a while, you know, it seemed like, again, typical Africa, coups here and there.
Look, I think it's something that bolt itself up to the status of a coup.
Uh-huh.
If you can recall, a few weeks ago.
The it's president, isolated. We'll call it an isolated incident.
Absolutely. I don't even think we can call it a coup because nobody really knows what it was.
But it's instability. Yeah, I mean, you have a leadership vacuum.
Yeah, but the backdrop to that, Ellis.
You have people being killed.
Yeah, and which is very, very sad. You know, it's always sad when there's a loss of life. Due to political upheaval. We see that a few weeks ago, the president wanted to push through a change in the constitution that would allow him to sit for a third term. And, you know, the citizenry of Burundi just would not have that. And I think it speaks to democracy. I mean, if your time is up, the president has, he sat for two terms, and now it's time to go to the polls and so forth. So hand over graciously, you know. Don't want to hang on to power, you know.
No, interesting.
And that's why I love South Africa so much.
Yeah,
you know.
Interesting.
Since 94, how many presidents did we have, Ellis?
Since 94 in South Africa?
In South Africa,
well,
yeah.
We've had six elections. I mean, that's for sure.
Absolutely. But I think we've had more presidents than elections.
Again.
Which is awesome,
but
for
stability.
Democracy.
But
yeah.
Stability is very important. And,
absolutely,
and that speaks to you know what you know. We promote on the show when we
totally.
Say when we say Africa is open for businesses because there also has to be you know clear rules and regulations about governance in terms of you know
absolutely
how the continent moves forward.
Yeah.
And what we are able to do.
You know, I'd just like to take you back to our discussion we had with Oliver last week. You know, Oliver says that they track security and stability on the continent. And, you know, he was mentioning since 1990, they were measuring like, on average, there was like 35 military coups happening. But that figure has diminished to 14. Now, that shows progress.
Absolutely.
You know, on our beautiful continent. And yeah, you know, we champion that Africa is open for business and we champion democracy.
So we're making progress and we're getting somewhere, which is, you know, something that will lead us into this next half of our show. We're going to take a quick break and prepare for our great guest who will be joining us. And you surely don't want to miss this part.
Absolutely.
So we'll be right back.
Candid Business on CliffCentral.com.
Hi, I'm Mike Brown, Nedbank Group CEO. You're listening to Candid Business, and Africa is open for business.
Africa is open for business.
Africa is open for business. Welcome to the second part of our show, Candid Business, coming to you live from our Rivona studios. As always, I'm Ellis Myandu, your host. And joined by Annie Hicks.
Yeah, good day. It's good to be back. The second stanza is going to be very exciting. And looking forward to it.
I think let's get right into it.
Because, absolutely.
Because we've whetted people's appetite.
Yeah.
You know, all week.
Really. Yes.
And finally, our special guest is here. Her name is Bisila Pokoko.
Yes, hi. How are you?
Good, good, good. Let me just give our listeners a brief background on Bisila. Bisila is a tenacious entrepreneur driving positive change through shared success. Her journey began in Valencia, Spain, where she was born to African parents. In a recent article on the Huffington Post, to which she is a regular contributor, Bisila described herself as a cultural hybrid, something which partly explains her tremendous success on the global stage. She is an entrepreneur, mentor, global business leader, philanthropist, and icon. Pokoko is the former executive director of the Spain-US Chamber of Commerce. At the age of 24, she set off from her native Spain for New York City, where she is now based, and that's where she lives. And we are pleased that she's joining us all the way from New York and is here in Johannesburg with us. Though she is now an American citizen, Pokoko is very much attuned to her African heritage. And that's something we're all proud of.
Yeah.
Pokoko is the founder of the Bisila Pokoko African Literacy Project. She's also the founder and CEO of Bisila Pokoko Embassy International, a global business consultancy firm. She's also founded Bisila Wines. These are all conversations we're going to have in this part of the show, which we've called A Candid Conversation with Bisila Bokoko. Bisila, welcome to Candid Business again.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure for me to be here.
Fantastic. So where do we begin? I mean, I noted on your Wikipedia profile that you are 40 years old? 40 years old?
40.
40 years old. But looking at your life's work, I mean, you've done tremendous amount of stuff. I mean, from Spain to the U.S. and now in Africa. So tell our listeners, what brings you to Africa?
Well, I'm always happy to be in Africa. I do a lot of work in building libraries in Africa, and South Africa is one of the places that I'm looking into putting my next library. I was in Zimbabwe just a few months ago, and we were very successful putting a library there. And I'm looking for rural areas where children usually have no access to books, and that's where we really want to go. Mm-hmm. From the outside world, South Africa has an image that it's very well developed and the economy grows very great and it's fast. But I see that the rural areas also are suffering and they need access to education and books. So that's what I'm, you know, one of my, I love this country. I was here before in Cape Town for the World Economic Forum a few years ago. Mm-hmm. And that was my first introduction to South Africa. And is when I learned that outside of what is the main towns and the main cities, you know, children also have many difficulties to get the standards of education that they need. Mm-hmm. And that's why the reason that I decided, let me come here and explore.
Okay. No, it's a pleasure to have you here. Obviously, that is your philanthropic side. But yeah, let's talk about your entrepreneurship side. Mm-hmm. When did it all begin for you?
Well, I think everything begins with education. Mm-hmm. I was very privileged to have a great education. I studied law and economics in university in Spain, and then I went to New York and studied Master in International Relations. But I was really, I think without that education, it won't be possible to do everything that I was able to do. And I got an opportunity to become an intern for the government of Valencia. So that's when I learned international business, and my work was to help Valencian companies to do business in the United States. Mm-hmm. And that led me to the position of the executive director of the Spain U.S. Chamber of Commerce, where I have a great landscape of business because I have to work with infrastructure, finance, fashion, cultural institutions, organizing trips for the president of the country, and putting together with business leaders in the United States. So that was very exciting. But when I finished my tenure in the Spanish Chamber of Commerce, I said, I'm missing something. I'm missing the African side. Why don't I apply what I learned in business between Europe and the United States? Because even though Spain was my main focus, I also work with the Spain, with all the European Chamber of Commerce. And then because I speak Spanish, a lot of the Latin American Chamber of Commerce is starting to count on me. And I said, but I'm missing my roots. I could not, I mean, I always say that three continents live in me, and I was missing the African one. So that's when I decided that I should learn more about the African business and apply what I learned through my experience to do business here, or at least helping European companies to come here, which is basically what I'm doing.
Okay, fantastic. Obviously, I mean, your background also involves Equatorial Guinea, because this is where your parents came from. One thing I haven't mentioned is that in January, Bisila was named the Woman of the Month by Lady Brill magazine. And there's a fantastic interview, actually, on their website, which, you know, captures, I think, an essence of, you know, your journey. Yeah. But, I mean, from the Chamber of Commerce to now, you know, creating Bisila Wines, is the Bisila Wines portfolio the first sort of venture for you into entrepreneurship? Is that what it was?
Yeah, that was. But to be completely honest, I did that when I was still in the Spain U.S. Chamber of Commerce. Okay. And the reason why I did that is because I was extremely scared to go by my own. And that's also something that I want to, you know, kind of share with the listeners, because I'm sure a lot of people want to be entrepreneurs. And my biggest fear was, I live always with a salary, and I have a bonus, and I have to take care of a family, and that makes me safe. So my first business venture, I did it because I said, I want to be an entrepreneur. I'm helping people and giving advice how to be entrepreneurs, but I'm not one myself. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I'll become one. So the first one, I did it with one foot still in the corporate world because I was a little bit scared. And I did it in 2009 when exactly was the worst time of the economy in Spain.
Yeah.
And a lot of people was telling me how crazy I am, but I said, in order to do things, you have to be crazy. It's the only way to do it.
Beautiful.
And so the first years were really, really difficult, and we lost a lot of money. But now we won awards in Germany and China, and we are selling around the world. So wow. I think that it's a matter of just be patient and be consistent. And, of course, you have vertigo sometimes when you do business, but it's part of it.
Sure. Yeah. So are these Spanish varieties in this portfolio of wines?
Yes, we have 12 right now. Mm-hmm. And basically we have wines from Rioja region, wines from Galicia region.
Okay.
And also we spoke with some wineries in Germany, and they wanted to have the name.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the reason why, and if you see a little bit the design of the bottle, it was a statement. A lot
sure.
of people believe that Africans, we don't do things with elegance and class.
Mm-hmm.
And in particularly in the European side, they believe that everything African has to be extremely ethnic. And I wanted to make a statement that, no, we could drink wine and have elegance. It force has.
Yeah.
I create a wine also thinking about a very feminine wine, a very easy way to drink wine, at the same time with an African accent. So
sure.
that was the whole purpose of it.
Before I give Annie a chance to ask a question, I don't want to hog this spotlight. Help our listeners. What does your name mean, Bisila?
Bisila actually is the mother of the Bubi people. Bubi is one of the ethnic groups that we live, convive in Equatorial Guinea.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And according with the mythology of the times, it will be the equivalent to the Virgin Mary, but it's the mother of... Uh-huh. You know, there is always a deity that is male and female in the African tradition. So this mm-hmm. will be the feminine deity.
Sure. It struck me, though, that, you know, I could say your name quite, you know, fluently. And to me, that underscores the fact that Africa is one.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
You know, we can all say our names.
Yeah. I think so. And I travel extensively in Africa, and I feel that I'm part of everywhere I go. I mean, when I arrived yesterday, I felt home. I just put a feet in the continent, and I was like, oh, my God, this feels really like home.
Fantastic. Annie?
Absolutely. A daughter from the soil of Africa.
Yes.
Awesome. Priscilla, I'm very intrigued, you know, by the entrepreneurial side of everything. And I'd like to know, how does that expand into Africa? I know that you're doing a lot of philanthropic work in terms of the libraries and so forth. But from a business perspective, because our payoff line here on Candid Business is Africa is open for business. And we know that the entire world's focus now mm-hmm. is looking toward Africa for growth and looking at ensuring that their businesses and economy benefits from this beautiful continent of Africa.
I'm not totally Afro-optimist, and I believe that the problem that exists outside is there is not enough knowledge about what is the opportunities and possibilities.
Sure.
The major disadvantage is that we don't market ourselves properly.
Yeah.
We don't know how to sell ourselves. I think that we are very shy in the way that we put ourselves out there, and this is really not helping.
Yep.
So I've been working a lot to promote business from other countries, and they really, you know, you have to say how great you are.
Yes.
And Africans, I think that we've been so... Always, we have such a low esteem that we really scared to say how great we are and what we can offer out there.
Yeah,
I see a lot of African people doing amazing things that they could go outside.
Yeah,
but they even are scared to sell it to the neighbor
next door.
So this is one of the disadvantages, and that's also the reason why we also is difficult to attract foreign investments.
Yeah.
And I work with different governments like Rwanda, Equatorial Guinea, Zimbabwe very closely in order to help them to shape that into a way that people really have a different perception.
Yes.
Because most of the news that comes outside is political.
Yeah.
It's ethnical problems.
Yeah.
All of this.
It's not so positive. The narrative is not positive.
So we need to change the perceptions of the people out there.
Absolutely.
And I believe that I find extremely professional people when I come here.
Yes.
And when I brought some foreign companies here, they were actually very surprised to see the logistics, the infrastructure.
Yes.
I mean, it's working, but the image that is outside is not helping.
So would you say that the media has got a major role to play?
Absolutely.
In augmenting that image into a more positive narrative? Because everything that's been going out from Africa to the West or even to the East is that Africa, you know, you should treat it with trepidation.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost like it's a wild frontier.
Absolutely. And also the word that it comes when it comes Africa is corruption. And we have to change that, because are you telling me there is no corruption in the Western world? Of course there
is. Of course
there
is.
Exists, but why always? I mean, everyone label us with this word.
True.
Every system has corruption, and it really depends on the people that you deal with at the end of the day.
Yeah.
But I don't see the chambers of commerce going out there and become international in trying to attract investments like other countries do. If you see China, you see different countries. I mean, they have really beautiful structures out there to really present themselves in a beautiful manner and attract these people. And I think that, for example, South Africa is a perfect example about, you know, how when you have the World Cup here, a lot of people were very skeptical at the beginning. But when they saw what we were able to put together, they have to shut their mouth. So we have to keep doing that, like really. But the problem is that we don't have always the opportunity to show them how great we are.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're spot on. I think that we're very good in terms of marketing ourselves from a tourism perspective, but not from a business perspective. And we need to do that much more aggressively.
Absolutely.
You know, in a positive way.
Fantastic. Bisila, you know, I noted that you had a wonderful article in Huffington Post not so long ago. In fact, last week, I think, Endings with Magical Beginnings. Entrepreneurship. Great story.
Thank you.
And in it, you quoted Professional Destiny. This is a book by Valerie Hasseldaden, where she writes, "You have to follow the signs, and when they all line up and point in a certain direction, it's time to morph and change." You know, someone listening to this show is possibly thinking, you know, how do I essentially do the great escape? You know, you've escaped corporate America to getting on a journey of your soul. What has inspired you to do that?
What I mean with endings brings magical beginnings is because sometimes around your life, it comes to a place that you are blocked, that you're not growing.
Mm-hmm.
And every day seems the same and you don't feel so good and it's Sunday and you're thinking, oh my God, it's Monday. I don't want to really go there. And a lot of things also, your coworkers are starting to become really not so nice to you. So a lot of things are happening. And I believe that this is signs of the universe, of God. You could call it many ways, but something is telling you it's the time for a change.
Sure.
And the change is within you. So when the whole circumstances around you become really difficult, it's because maybe you need to change. You know, when you start a new venture, you're super happy and you're excited. But sometimes part of the human development is that we get bored and we don't want to do the same things. And you want to do something different, or really you're thinking, I'm great and I could do this for myself. What I should just make money for other people.
Yeah.
And in this moment is when you have to make the change. But the change doesn't come in from outside. It's not to try to find the right opportunity or go out there.
Mm-hmm.
You have to change something in you, and it's to believe that you could make it. So I think there's a lot of work that you have to do inside. It's inner wisdom to find it. What is the way? Because everyone, we have some skills, some passions, and we need to make them happen. And you could make money with your passions. But most people, we are told not to, because everyone explains us, you have to go to university, you have to get a job, and you will make money with that and forget your dreams. So I think that this is not a real truth. I see so many people. And also, when I started changing, I started to meet a lot of people that they were really entrepreneurs and they did their own ventures. Mm-hmm. Like when I wasn't so happy and I was thinking, I've been doing 12 years the same thing and I'm so tired of all the companies just complaining and this and that. Everyone who came to me, they were looking for a job. I looked like an employment company or something. And then I said, why is this happening to me? And then I went to my board, and the board that before was so nice to me and every idea that I present, they love it. They were very hostile to me. And then I said, you know, I'm bigger than this. I have to change something. Yeah. But and the reality is that because I didn't change it, they invite me to go because I wasn't ready. I mean, I was really with fears to just make the jump by myself. Sure. So when that happened, then I realized that, you know what, this happened is because I should have taken that road 2 years ago and I didn't. Sure. And something pushed me out of the door, and the political change and the different people came, and I was not useful anymore in that position. But I realized that this is the time, because sometimes crisis equals opportunity.
Yeah,
and absolutely. We have a tendency to just see the dark side. But when you see the positive side and you're thinking, okay, instead of crying and said, oh my God, I lost my job, I could say, you know what? Mm. This is the time to really do something about myself, and this business is going to be about me.
Fantastic. Look, Bisila, over the last week, obviously, I've been able to do the brief of research, you know, on you and your background. I'm sure that's a positive thing.
Yeah.
I noted that you emphasize networks, making the connections, you know, leveraging, you know, other people. In bringing about, you know, whatever opportunity that you work into, what how significant is that, and how does one really leverage a network?
I think this is the biggest key. The biggest key is to create networks, because first of all, I could not do this alone. I had through my path a lot of people, and each person gave me something, or gave me a push, or gave me a good piece of advice, or just the way they just told me how great I could do something, it helped me. At that moment, I needed to hear that. So I think that since I started to work in international business, I was very careful to take care of my relationships. So I don't look down to anybody. I mean, I remember the first time when I got to my office and I started to see interns, and my secretary told me, are you serious? I mean, you have no time. Your day is really condense. You have no time for these kids. And I said, I need time for these kids, because we don't know who these kids will be one day.
Yes.
And a lot of these interns that I spent 30 minutes of my time with them, then they became part of companies and they became members of the chamber, or they give me a piece of business, or simply we became great friends, which I love to really love people. And I think that I always take care of that. And when I go to a conference or I go somewhere, I just take care of that if I get a business card, I stay in touch. And now it's even easier than before, because we have all this social media.
Sure.
And it doesn't take so much to just see the birthdays of people and say, happy birthday. I exist. I'm breathing here on this part of the wall. How is everything? I mean, I think that this is how the networks work. And also, you if you really take care of your relationships, you don't know how great they could work for you, because people could surprise you. And I have a very extensive network around the world, and I always feel safe everywhere I go, because I know that there's someone there that I could count on.
Okay, fantastic. Before I go to Annie, tell us what have been some of the accomplishments of your consulting agency?
Well, I think the thing that I'm more proudest of everything is a company called Picolinos. We create a Maasai collection, and we gave employment to 3,600 women in Maasai Mara. These women before, they never have seen money, And then they start seeing euros. And they were able to pay the school for the year for the kids, improve the nutrition, and get access to medical support. So, and this is what I believe in. And that's why the logo of my company, our motto, is I'm in the business of doing good. Because the company make 1 million euros, this company in Spain. Mm-hmm. But also, a lot of people benefit from it. A whole community benefit from this project. Wow. And I work with ADCAM Academy, which is also an NGO in Spain. And I work with Picolinos. And I was basically putting the whole strategy together to become international. And this product that the women created, we sell it in 62 countries. Mm-hmm. And also, we brought a celebrity from the United States who was the spoken person, Olivia Palermo, which all the girls follow. When it comes to fashion. So, I mean, this is really one of the projects. And that was my first project, actually, when I went by my own, because I was thinking, what do you really want to do? And I love fashion. I love Africa. And I think that I should combine both. And I like to help people. So that was the first project.
So is there a fashion label in the works? I mean, because I've also noted that you're quite, you know, photogenic, you know, say the least. Is there a fashion label in the works? What is your scope in that regard?
Well, I always been, the last 5 years, I've been working a lot in fashion because I help a lot of companies to do business in fashion. And then a lot of them ask me to just photograph with the clothes or became the image, like Agatha Ruiz de la Prada, or I have different fingers, 360s out of the company. So, I mean, it happened, just happened organically that photographers wanted to see me with these clothes, and I did some jewelry, and I, at the same time, I helped them with the strategy. And because I had a lot of followers in Facebook and Twitter, when I use these brands, people like to use them. So I kind of become like an ambassador by like that.
Okay. I see that you're also on the culinary side of things. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Oh, I love cooking.
Oh, yeah.
Well, look, we need Spanish cuisine.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I think that cooking is love, and
yes,
it's a wonderful way to also market the country. One of the things that I worked very closely with Spain, it was about to enhance the gastronomy of Spain.
Yeah.
And if you remember, like 10 years ago, Spain was very well known because it was the country where we go to eat.
Yeah.
And the best chef in the world, it was a Spaniard. And okay, it is something that I work very closely. So this is how the TV channel asked me to be sometimes a host with them.
Okay.
And to try to explain a little bit part of the culture of the food, because the food is also culture.
Yeah.
And because I love to read, they said, well, you should also explain what is behind all these dishes that we're doing. So this is a little bit what I do. And one of the biggest tasks that we want is to accomplish to come to the continent, because we had a beautiful cuisine, but it's unknown. I mean, it's really difficult to find a great African restaurant anywhere. In Paris, maybe you could find some. Most of the West African, in New York, even though there's a huge city, the restaurants really don't cater to the people from New York. It's only for the small communities that they use these restaurants.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm a little bit sad that no one saw, because part of the traveling and part of the, you know, tourism industry is food. We
yes,
move
absolutely.
By food. I
True.
Mean, everyone wants to go to Paris and eat a croissant.
Yeah.
Or you want to drink here wines from South Africa. People love to go to the wineries and visit them.
Yes.
So it's a great way to also market. So this is why we see the business side also.
So coming through.
Beautiful. Let me ask you, Priscilla, you know, at the weekend, I was looking through Arianna Huffington's book, Thrive,
yes,
which I was fortunate to receive a copy of in Davos when I was there in January. There's a line there. She quotes someone about the fact that there is no work-life balance. It's just a dream. We only have one life. So that is a leading into asking you, how do you do all this? Because you have a family.
Yes.
You got small kids.
Well, they're not so small. I mean, they are 12 and 10.
Uh-huh.
And I think everything is about quality time. The first years of their lives, they travel with me. And I think that they are used to see their mother going from one meeting to another. I breastfed for 2 years each, and they were from one meeting to another with me. So they are really well travelers. And also what I do is in the summers, because now I could do it, and I have 2 months off.
Okay.
And usually July and August, we go to Europe and we spend the time traveling with my family in Spain. Mm-hmm. And in Christmas, we do the same. And it's all about, I mean, of course, you could not do 100% great in everything.
Sure.
But I realized that what the really children need is happy parents. When your parents are frustrated, this frustration go to the children. So when I realized that, I realized that my dreams should be my dreams, their dreams should be their dreams. So I have to accomplish mine. And, you know, they have their own lives to really decide what they're going to do with them.
Sure.
But, you know, I think that they very in line with me, because this is the mother that they know.
Well, they have no choice. They just have to follow.
Exactly.
No, fantastic. We're coming towards the end of our show, Priscilla. But, you know, as always, we put the folks who come on the show on the spot.
Yeah.
We would like to invite you to come back to Johannesburg.
So I will.
So we could do a live event with you.
Yes.
I'm sure there's folks who, you know, would love to get an opportunity to interact with you and get more in-depth insights into how do you straddle the world, Africa and Spain and America.
Yeah.
And is that something you would accept?
I will, definitely. I mean, now that I know you guys, of course I will come.
Lovely.
Great stuff. Annie?
I think as a parting shot, it's certainly a privilege to have met you. And you're certainly an inspiration and an icon to ladies out there who's listening, you know, and to African ladies out there. You know, like you were saying, you mentioned something very pertinent as we started chatting. You said that, you know, we're not confident in ourselves to market ourselves aggressively. And when we have this get together, this live, that should be one of the things that you should emphasize, just to let people feel confident within themselves and have a strong self-image. So it's really been a pleasure.
I have the perfect techniques to change that. I just came from Santo Domingo,
and
I did this with a group of women, 800 women.
Wow.
And
brilliant.
They came so differently. I mean, I will be back.
Beautiful.
Well, it's the reason I said Priscilla Pococo is not only an entrepreneur, but also an icon.
Absolutely.
So there's a roadmap, and she's the lodestar for all of us. And we say thank you for being part of Candid Business today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Candid Business on CliffCentral.com.